Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for checking into Northern Transmissions. This week we have Ethan from Howling Rain. We covered many cool subjects among working with the great Rick Rubin on their latest record, as well as the difference of songwriting styles from his old band Comets on Fire.
I want to ask you right away, I'm sure you've talked about it, but what was it like working with Rick Rubin on your guys' record?
I mean, that's a question that, you know, everybody wants to ask, and I guess get a couple of little, blurb answers on. I mean, the real answer to that question is a lot more complicated and spans over a four-year period. I mean, 5 years if you include the time that he and I first started getting together and made the contract and stuff for us to be on American. And, to be honest, I can't say that working on this record over the last 4 years with him, I mean, it was a challenge to make the record, to survive the making of it, working with him, well, in those years, you know, there was some times that were really high and other times that were a bit of a challenge or a struggle. You know, I think anybody coming out of something that they sort of focused on and obsessed over for, you know, 3 or 4 years, one single project like that, that, you know, ends up being kind of threatening to, you know, the survival of your band and stuff. I mean, it's not just Rick, you know, there's lots of factors that went in to create this thing to become an epic journey, you know, instead of just we're making a record, we're putting it out on the cycle, 7 months later it's all done and we're on tour, you know. It just didn't happen that way. It turned into something else altogether. But he had his hand in elongating the process as well. You know, it's a little complicated. I mean, Rick and I are still friends, and there were things that artistically, to work with him was very rewarding.
Thank you.
Was the end result of Russian Wilds, was it something you were pleased with, or did it come out different than you had anticipated?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what, you know, you don't know what to anticipate. I mean, you can't really think that. I mean, this was, we'd rehearsed these songs. So, I mean, you know, there weren't a ton of surprises, like, oh my God, I can't believe it came out this way, because we worked so long and hard and rehearsed for so long and rehearsed the songs so hard, you know, to try to, you know, make an attempt, not to make a perfect record, but to make one where the grasping at perfection is a part of the aesthetic. You know, with the Stones or whatever, like a classic Stones record, like Exile or something like that, you know, grasping at perfection is not part of the aesthetic in any way, shape, or form. Then there's other albums where people do that, you know, and we all know perfection is impossible, and perfection in art is an atrocity, but grasping at perfection, you know, the sort of obsession with perfection in art, you know, with a rational understanding that it's impossible, well, that starts creating some interesting, you know, dynamics, some interesting tensions, and you know, kind of a slight edge of sort of insanity to the process. We did that, you know, this time around. We had a little bit more of a budget and a little bit more time, and once we kind of got in the obsessive mode and realized this thing was going to go on for years and stuff, well, we just engaged with it all the way through the other side instead of just saying, fuck it, you know. So all that said, you know, I am pleased. You know, it became dire enough at some point, you know, just to put things in perspective. A band like this, like the Chili Peppers or Metallica or something like that, well, if it takes them 4 years to make a record, they can take some time off. They're financially stable. And even if they're not, if for some reason they lost their fortune, they can go out and take an outdoor gig in Germany or something like that and make $1 million and put some money into the coffers and just say, okay, let's take our time and think about this. But when you're an unknown band, when you're already starving artist, to stretch a single album out, which is supposed to be the foundation of your livelihood, you're supposed to go out and tour on it and be able to go through all this stuff. Well, 1 year goes by, okay, that's all right. 2 years, okay, well, we stretch it out, things are going to get a little thin. After 2 years, you get into that third year, and you're like, whoa, you know, we're financially run ragged. We're trying to make the damn space run, and get into that fourth year, and you're going in a crazy zone. You know, the buzz about you is gone. You catch a little buzz and have a little momentum and can get a little fees at the clubs and get some people in those clubs to see you. You know, that's all based on you being part of the larger album buyer and ticket holders conversation about music and what they're doing. It's hard to keep on their tongues. It's hard to keep on their minds and their hearts. Anyways, this is all just to paint a picture of, you know, getting to a point where you've gone so far in the desert that, you know, you can't turn back. It's way too far to turn back and survive. You don't have enough water. You don't have enough bread. And at the same time, what's in front of you just looks like a million more miles of, you know, waves that's going to grind to a halt and die. You know, we did make it to the other side of that thing, but that thing, you know, that challenge, you know, was a part of it, hitting these points of despair, you know, these roadblocks that just seem like, well, this is the end. This is a big wall in front of us in the middle of a place where we don't have much strength left anyways when we die out here in the sun. Was I pleased? I was just fucking happy to get the record done. Once we finally got the thing done and mastered and everything, all these crazy things were going on at the label, all this things that were totally out of our control. It didn't have anything to do with us. But, you know, the politics between the label and their parent company, whatever, these things that are personal, the private business matters to them, but they have an effect on us. They threaten us all of a sudden, too. I mean, every single step of the way, some shit came down the ladder and knocked us, you know, knocked us off till we're just hanging by a finger, you know, over and over, and years go by, and, you know, it's just crazy when you think about it like that. You know, what the fuck are you guys doing? You're a rock band. What are you trying to focus on? One single album, one single project. I watched you disappear into crowded gray line. You're shaking off the tears from woeful eyes, but you couldn't stop the shaking of your spine. Kicking your heart.
stiff, like I just seen my life secrets scattered by the wind in the road. I looked upon my lies, it shook me like I'd flown my kite into electrical skies. By some trick of time, I'd forgotten your smell. The water in the well at the bottom of your eyes. But that can't satisfy me now. The sight of pain.
Hi guys, thanks again for listening to Northern Transmissions. I hope you're enjoying our interview with Ethan from the band Howl and Rain. If you want more information or tour dates about the band, you can check out their website at www.howlandrain.com. They also have a MySpace. If you'd like some information about our show, Northern Transmissions, www.northerntransmissions.com. You can email us there. Check us out on Twitter, Northern Trans.
I didn't realize what a tumultuous process it was. I mean, you guys, you're an artist, obviously, foremost. And it's like, I mean, you have to have one foot in the business aspect of it. I mean, unless, like as you said before, unless you're Anthony Kiedis or whatever, where you can just hire the best lawyer. But it must have been, was it just the fact that there was so much takeover and mergers and stuff? Was that the big stumbling block in putting the record out, or...?
No, that was one of the smallest stumbling blocks. I mean, it didn't turn out to be, you know, the be-all, end-all. The main thing, you know, you can't have, like, a sea change event for anything by one thing. You know what I mean? It's got to be, like, an earthquake that happens, and then a tsunami, and then the nuclear reactors because of the tsunami, and then something goes wrong with the shutting down of nuclear reactors, and they're melting over onto this thing, and it happens to be the place where all the fresh water is, and all of a sudden there's a fresh water crisis, and all of a sudden you've got a real, you know, an overall thing happening, and you say, well, what was the key event? It's the chain, every step of the way, getting the chain of events to happen. And that's what, you know, happened here. I mean, when we got back, we toured on Magnificent Fiend. Our last record came out in 2008. We toured for it on about a year, maybe a little longer. And after that, everybody except me and Joel, we found that just us left. You know, some members came and went and stuff after that. And Joel and I had to put together a new band. And that took a little time, you know,
okay,
to put the band together. It took some time to get new guys to rehearse. And meanwhile, I'm going down and working with Rick on songs. And we're working on stuff. And he also is, like, really under this theory, like, look, I don't want to just go in and do the next 8 songs. I hate that. I want to do, you know, give me a lot of song demos. Let's choose the best 12 songs out of 40 songs or whatever and make a masterpiece, you know, instead of just your next 8 songs and making your third record or whatever, like most bands do. So we're putting together a new band. We're doing that. I'm going back and forth between Bay Area and Los Angeles to meet with Rick. He's going to be a hard guy to get scheduling with, as you can imagine. He's a very busy person, so sometimes you get all your shit together and you're ready to go meet with them or whatever, but that's not going to happen for 2.5 months. You know what I mean? And if you're doing a project like that, well, sometimes it happens the next day. Hey, I'm ready. I got an opening tomorrow. Come down. Let's meet. Let's work on it for the day. And other times it's like, you know, you got to go through all the hoops and stuff to try to get some time, you know, when he's not busy working on another record or this or that. As you keep adding these stalling moments to the process, if you've got some 2-month stalls like that over a process of some years, and they're happening, you know, incrementally every 3 or 4 months or something like that, well, all of a sudden you've added another year on in month stalls or 2-month stalls. Then when we got the record finished at the end, it's like, okay, let's release it. Oh, look, the release date would be December 20th. We can't release it right then. That's stupid. Nobody releases, like, at Christmas. That's the break. So it's just like, it coincidentally, we fell right, got it done right in time that we have to hold on for another 3 months after that or something. You know, like, every little thing, you know, just comes together, and, you know, you're just living and working through something. But, you know, as you start to add it all up and you realize you're sort of out on a boat, you know, trying to build this big glass mansion on a fucking life raft or whatever, and the whole world is kind of spinning and moving on and changing and evolving without you. If I ask you what you did for the last 4 years, I'll bet there's some shit in there. You know, you actually, something happened. <You
know? laughs> I don't know. That's a tough question. Ask me what I did the last 4 years.
It should be a tough question. But if you ask me, it's a single answer with a complicated explanation.
Yeah.
Beautiful feathered child with a killing jaw.
always wanted to do when you were making that music?
Yeah. I mean, originally it was kind of going to be a sort of yang to the Comet yang or vice versa. I don't know if yin or yang, which one, the Palindrome and Comet's better, but you get the picture, black and white swirling together, you know? When we were knee-deep in Comets, Comets was still really kind of wild, like violent sound and nihilistic rock and roll, and we tangled with some of this harmony stuff and some melodic stuff, especially you trio brought in piano songs, and some of the kind of laid-back groove stuff once in a while, especially when we're jamming, just fooling around. But I thought, oh, there's lots of powerful stuff in there. You know, there's a thing in Comet that there may never be a place for us to do Crosby, Stills, Nash-style three-part harmonies or something like that. Maybe that's not appropriate. You know, I don't know. In the end, we toyed with some of those things in Comet. But, you know, I'd like to fill out the other side of the spectrum here for myself, you know, and is something like Helen Rain that's melody and harmony and groove based and really songwriting based, and experiment with we'd done a pretty deep and successful experimentation and sort of running a group with what they said about the Grateful Dead, calling it a troubled democracy, you know, one where the group makes decisions artistically, business wise, everything. And that's down to the artwork or the way that the whatever is, you know, and that can be fucking painful for all of us. Sometimes that would produce, you know, an ingenious output by the group mind artistically. And other times, any one of us felt like sometimes it would produce the lowest common denominator, something we could all agree on that wasn't anyone's first choice. And I thought, well, you know, also groups like that, if the five members or the four members or how many people you got in the group, if they get at odds with each other, the group grinds to a halt and breaks up.
Right.
Breaks apart. Its legacy, for better or for worse, can't go on without all five members going, I'm ready to put all the gasoline I have into this and put my 20% of the tank in, you know, and fill it up. So Helen Rain also is experimentation, and what would it be like, you know, if I had put together something that is, you know, got a poor songwriter, you know, and that will hold its legacy together, its aesthetic together over time. Even if members come and go, it won't destroy the group, you know, because new people can come in, and, you know, I'll be the sign of this thing, but, you know, people will... The musicians that come and be a part of it, they can be the aesthetic, you know, the musical aesthetic of it, so that, you know, the listener doesn't always have to worry about the spine. That's not where you see beauty in a figure. And I've tried to, you know, do it so I also experiment with the idea that it won't turn into a total dictatorship, you know, that the leadership is something that is for the good of the group and the good of its legacy and the fact that it can go on and on and on, stay fresh if people leave instead of being a bad thing. It can be, you know, re-energizing.
Your songwriting seems to be a bit more disciplined. Do you find writing more of a difficult task these days, or are you just evolving as a songwriter?
No, it's easier now. It's a lot easier, I think. I mean, at least I'm much more prolific now. You know, I wrote countless stuff for this Russian Wilds record over the 3 years. I mean, we put so much songs and so much music on the table, and I started to learn how to do more than just get the stuff that comes out of the ether, you know, the kind of God-given stuff that just hits your brain and you sit down and wrote a song and in 45 seconds it turns out to be a great one. Or how to read a little more if that was a good thing that hit me but all I got was a verse or something. How to work with it a little more and how to walk away from the stuff that isn't working and just keep moving, keep working on things that maybe that'll make sense later. So, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, at the core, you still need to have those sort of, well, where did that come from? I just, you know, was in the shower. All of a sudden it hit me. I sat down immediately and this song just came out. You got to have that. You know, you can't just craft songs. But, you know, after 10 years of making records and learning how to sort of discipline myself to read tea leaves of what's going on with your songwriting, you know, that stuff you can learn to do a little more. Okay, now I've got all these little riffs, I've got these pages and books full of lyrics, I've got all these old demos, I got an old song that I love that doesn't make sense, you know, to what I'm doing now, can it be revamped, reworked, you know, all these kinds of things.
And there's another show for Northern Transmissions. Thanks as always for listening. Thank you to Ethan from Howlin' Rain. You can check out the band at www.howlinrain.com for tour or record information. They are doing some pretty cool gigs this summer. Thank you as always to Spencer, the kid, the great engineer with a flashy new haircut on, looking as cool as usual. And I am Charles Brownstein, and if you want to check out the website, www.northerntransmissions.com or Northern Trans on Twitter. Thank you, and we'll see you soon.